Corruption in the Ballard administration. Where will this investigation lead? The General Assembly prepares for a veto override, an ISTEP investigation, and John Gregg's plan. That, plus Mike Pence and the Media Shield, Indy 500 picks, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 24, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, the FBI conducted a raid at the City County building. Two Indianapolis City employees now face charges for federal fraud and bribery in connection with a program to sell off abandoned and tax-delinquent properties. An indictment names Reggie Walton, Assistant Administrator of the Department of Metropolitan Development, and John Hankins, who served as the project manager for the Indianapolis Land Bank. The heads of two Indianapolis-based nonprofits and the head of a for-profit real estate corporation were also named. U.S. Attorney Joe Hawks.
Well, those in positions of public trust, both here in Indianapolis and across the Southern District of Indiana, I hope these developments have confirmed the message: the era of corruption is over. No more theft, no more fraud, no more bribery or extortion, no more business as usual. If you violate the public trust, you will be found, you will be investigated, and you will be held fully accountable in a court of law.
To what degree is the Ballard administration damaged by these arrests? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, will this investigation reach farther into the Ballard administration?
You know, it's kind of hard to see or to tell. I mean, obviously, the U.S. Attorney's Office keeps it pretty close in. What's interesting about this, you know, they're still entitled to the presumption of innocence, like anybody is who's
charged. Although the mayor fired them today.
Well, but what I was curious about was, you know, you've got the mayor over there and you got him consolidating power, and he has a little trouble overseeing the power that he has right now, obviously, with this, because this story was out last, I think it was last fall.
The Indianapolis Business Journal had that. Problems
and
in the land bank.
You would think, if that was out, you wouldn't necessarily fire them, but you'd certainly do an internal investigation to find out whether there was any truth to that story, and if so, you'd take action. Now, there was enough to get a federal indictment, and that ought to be enough for antennae to go up in the mayor's office. And I know these guys are close to him, but if you can't supervise something as basic as that, you're in trouble.
The question's been raised, should the mayor have a better idea what's going on in his administration than the FBI does?
Well, let's start by clarifying what Ann just said. First of all, after the story that appeared in the IBJ, an investigation was done, and nothing was found there. This has happened since then, since that article appeared in the IBJ. And if it hadn't been for a wiretap and a tip-off that the U.S. attorney got, they probably wouldn't still be out there doing whatever it was they're supposedly have been doing. So, you know, there's 7,000 employees in city government, and, you know, these two people look like they've made a very, very bad decision. And if so, if it's proven that they have, they need to be prosecuted to the fullest. But I don't think it goes any farther than that. He has since hired Forrest Bowman Jr. to work with the U.S. Attorney's Office.
The mayor has.
And I guess he did the same kind of thing with the Biden administration, so he's got a reputation of being somebody that can work on these
Bowman's
kinds
a local
of
attorney who he worked
right.
With the Biden administration to clear up the lottery scandal, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Political damage for Greg Ballard.
I think it will be determined by his actions coming out of these indictments and the announcement of these indictments. I think by firing the individuals, by appearing at this point, clear. I'm sure if he had the mulligan in his pocket, he could go back and, as you suggest, once the Business Journal had started raising questions, been more proactive. He doesn't have that option at this point. So now it's incumbent on him, it seems to me, to be as much of a house cleaner or at least somebody who clearly is not trying to circle the wagons and be defensive, but somebody who is actually trying to get at the truth. And I would just point out, and made reference to this consolidation, and I think what is intriguing, the bill that, of course, we've been talking about now for, what,
it's
a month?
It's the Mayor Powerbrand bill,
well,
yeah.
That's not the official. I don't think it says that on the document
it's in
itself.
It's the fine print.
But, I mean, among other things, yeah. It does increase the number of individuals that the mayor appoints to the Metropolitan Development Commission from a minority to a majority.
And the land bank is under
the land bank and is the entire, effectively, right. That is the board of directors right. for that department. So that...
There are also a couple of land bank related bills that are going to a study committee this summer. So the legislature right. is going to have some say about this.
Talking about mulligans, I would just say maybe the governor wishes he had known about this a few weeks ago. He might have, who knows, maybe the decision on vetoing or signing that bill would
have
been different.
That would have required courage. That's something he's missing.
All right. There was some discussion here last week about Joe Hogsett and his potential political aspirations, which a lot of people think might include mayor. Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. But, you know, it's been done many times from the U.S. Attorney's Office in many places to wage a very public campaign against corruption, but not just corruption, all of the other issues that he's taken an interest in, not the least of which is guns and education and some other issues. So I don't think it's any long leap to go from one to the other, but I have to say that he's given no indication of that because he can't. And two, he seems to enjoy what he's doing right now, and he's doing an awful lot of zeal.
He's on a roll.
He's told me it's the best job he's ever had. But
and
you know what's interesting about this too? I mean, I remember Eric Holcomb sitting in that chair and talking about a couple of Democrats way down the pecking order who got into trouble in a culture of corruption. Now we have the U.S. Attorney's Office circling around the former prosecutor. We obviously have a conviction of the highest elected election official in the state of Indiana, Republican, yeah. And now we have it in the mayor's. You think he might use the same terminology, culture of corruption?
I don't know that he would, but I will say this. If Joe Hogsett gets to the point where it looks like he is using his office to put himself in position, if he can go too far in one of these and crosses that line, that will come back to backfire
well,
on him if he decides
you can't make
to
a charge. You
office.
Can't bring a charge.
I'm telling you, if he does...
He's not going to do that.
I'm telling you, appearances are everything, okay. As you well know.
But
and
everything.
If he gets out of hand with his aggression on this stuff, he does something that doesn't look like it's fair in any way, shape, or form, he's going to hurt himself.
But that hasn't happened yet.
I said last week I don't think it's happened yet.
And,
but if he does,
he's not A, going to do that, and B, all of these indictments have to be okayed by Washington as well. So, you know, there are checks and balances on that.
The General Assembly will return to the State House for one day on June 12th to vote on a potential override of a Mike Pence veto. Leaders announced that decision at a meeting of the Legislative Council. They say the governor's rejection of a bill that included, among other provisions, local tax hikes in two counties creates problems for both state government and local governments.
It was a bill that needs to go forward.
We're going to have consideration at that time of the veto override, and we'll take a vote.
We took our veto decisions very seriously, and we'll be making our case to members of the General Assembly to sustain our veto.
Mike McDaniel, is a veto override guaranteed in this case?
Well, there are no guarantees, but I would certainly say that anytime you've got the President pro tem mm-hmm. and the Speaker of the House both saying that we need to turn this around, the chances are that that's where this is headed. I mean,
taking a step that's never been taken before to call a special.
They always plan for a day.
Right.
But rarely do they actually take it.
They've never taken
it. Well, they've never taken it. Okay, then that's even more rare. But they always put a day on the calendar, and they did that in the last day. But I will say this. I understand what the governor was trying to do here on those two counties that were collecting the tax after
Jackson
the authority.
Jackson and Pulaski County were collecting taxes
tax
retroactively.
After the authority had expired. And I understand that, but the problem is that this bill that this was part of is the collective bill that his own Department of Revenue There's always a Department of Revenue cleanup bill that does technical things every session.
It aligns state taxes with federal taxes.
And this was what was going on in that bill. So I think people thought when they made this correction in this bill that it was safe because it was in that bill. Well,
right.
The governor had another idea, and now they're going to have to. What I think a result in this is you're going to see a lot better communication between the governor's office and the third floor.
Somebody
as a
needed
result
to tell
this.
Them to put those in two
exactly.
different bills. It takes a simple majority to override.
I think they'll override because this was a clear case of Mike Pence wanting to pad his resume for future office as opposed to what was good legislation or what was legislation that was necessary for those communities. He didn't care about that. He wanted to say he vetoed tax increases, and that's what all this was about.
So what does this do to Mike Pence's authority?
If it's
an override.
I think it does gain the attention. He's made his point, and he probably suspected that this would get overridden because of what Mike said. It's loaded up with all kinds of technical corrections and revisions that need to get through. So I think he knew what was going to happen. He's made his point. I think the communication will be better. And here's something else I'd like to see. You know, it's supposed to be one subject matter, and I know that there were a lot of related tax issues.
Right.
But dang, if we could just do that. I know it won't happen.
You think they're going to put an end to log rolling?
Come on.
If the Supreme Court gets serious and somebody takes a case to them, because it really is a problem. Seriously. It's
you true. Know what, though? The courts, I mean, here in other jurisdictions, the last thing they want to do is wade into.
I understand
I
that.
I mean, there's just that natural. I'm not saying they shouldn't, I mean, philosophically, but it's just been the practice that's your dirty laundry.
Right.
You go fold it.
Right.
Wash it and fold
it. We end up
with
a lot of dirty laundry and bad legislation.
And all get set that same way, you know. I mean,
unrealistic. That's the end result. If they get to a situation where it looks like you're going to have a problem, they'll put everything into budget.
Yep.
Because budget
that's
is more likely
times.
To be passed.
Well, and just, I would just point out, this is kind of a pattern we've seen throughout back to the start of this session, where the General Assembly has not been afraid, despite shared party affiliation, to flex its muscles. So on the tax, their reaction to the governor's call for a tax cut, 10% tax cut. We've seen it several times where it's sort of,
right.
You know, hey, we are equal branches.
They did find middle ground there.
They did find middle ground.
An override is not exactly
I'm not sure
ground.
There's, yeah.
All right, the Legislative Council this week scheduled a hearing in mid-June to investigate problems with the I-STEP exam. Test maker CTB McGraw-Hill will be called on the carpet. Computer problems first interrupted test taking for students in a variety of schools earlier this month, and then forced school districts to reduce the number of students taking the test at one time by half. Lawmakers want CTB McGraw-Hill to explain.
To come to Indianapolis and explain how the problems occurred, why they were not prepared for those problems, what they're doing about it to assure that these problems don't arise in the future.
The announcement was made in a meeting of the Legislative Council, a group made up of leaders from both houses and both parties in the General Assembly. State education officials will also be questioned, as will school superintendents. House Speaker Brian Bosma.
We need to get to the bottom of it.
This was the first time that schools were encouraged to have students take the test online whenever possible, and CTB McGraw-Hill is the main target of the probe.
And for a highly paid vendor to have this occur is totally unacceptable. The schools have a right to be upset about it.
Senate President Pro Tem David Long there, John Katzenberger, will they get to the bottom of this?
I think they will, and I think they should. We saw this week where the state's largest school corporation in Fort Wayne has said that it's questioning the results of these exams.
They won't accept the results unless they're verified by a third party.
That's right. And it's a serious matter because not only does it affect the students in their career, but it affects the educators and the school districts because of all of the high stakes incentives that have been built into the funding for schools and for pay for teachers. So I think that they better get to the bottom of this, and they better make sure that the vendor better make good on whatever problems they've got.
What we're used to the General Assembly holding study committee sessions over the summer. This isn't a study committee. This is there's no legislation tied to this. They're looking at something that happened after they finished their session. This is unusual.
It may go back to what I just mentioned a moment ago with the previous question. I mean, this sense that you have experienced legislative leadership, I think clearly comfortable in their own skin, who are willing to show that they are independent and that they are a force in state government as the Constitution in Indiana suggests they should be. But you're right. I joked back during Indiana lawmakers when the legislative leadership suggested maybe, is this the first? Yes, thank you. First, I got to get the plug in, even the show's off the air for the season. Is this the first step to, you know, a year-round session? You know, you want to get them to react. Not that, they'll say. But clearly there's a lot more going on this summer than might typically be the case.
They're calling for a one-day hearing here with potential follow-ups.
But there are a lot of other bills, though, that are, and issues that are being – this is going to be a busy summer, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Busier than usual. That's right. And this is akin to a congressional investigation.
Yes. And Speaker of the House Bozeman and President Pro Tem of the Senate Long are absolutely correct about this. They should haul these people in there and say, how can this happen? Why weren't you ready? Because this puts so much stress on the students, on teachers, on the families of students, all the way down the line. And then you're counting on these results to make a lot of decisions. And so this is important stuff, and they better get to the bottom of it, or the system needs to change.
You know what, though? Even if it is verified by a third party, it's still going to have an asterisk next to it because the kids were all supposed to take it. The idea was take it one time. Well, now you've got to take it a different time.
You don't have an asterisk next to the pay, and you don't have an asterisk next to the grade when it goes in.
That's the problem. Because some teachers get performance bonuses.
That's my point. I'm agreeing with you. There's never going to be a widespread acceptance of this. But
you have so many things geared to that. That's not going to stop that tracking based on whatever the results are, whether they're reliable or not. So, I mean, I think it's actually a good thing they're doing. I just wish they had staff to really look at this like a congressional hearing, because that's really the only forum. There's no litigation out there. There's nothing else public that can be, and I think it's a good idea.
John Gregg, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate in 2012, confirmed this week he is considering another run. Gregg narrowly lost to Republican Mike Pence last November. He says he hasn't decided whether it's worth another run, but he told Democrats in Harrison County that he wanted to keep going following 2 years on the campaign trail. But he said that was a lighthearted response to the local Democratic chairman's insistence that he should be governor. Still, he has traveled the state the last few months, speaking at local fundraisers and gauging support among Democratic activists. John Schwanes, do you expect John Gregg to run again?
I think we'll run again for something. I mean, here's somebody, you look at some politicians and you see the campaigning, you almost read that through the body language of what they're saying, that that's the necessary evil to actually try to get office and implement policy. And I'm not saying he doesn't have an interest in policy, but he seems like the happy warrior on the camp. He actually enjoys that. And there are a lot of other politicians, and we could certainly sit here and make a list of them, who probably despise, truth be known, that part of the process.
He's been to 17 Jefferson Jackson Day dinners so far this year.
He doesn't have anything to do.
He's spoken to 30 labor groups.
He's either a glutton for punishment or he is running for governor. And I think it's the latter, although it may also be the former. I think, until others declare, he has the experience of the campaign. He has the close race at hand. And it'll be up to the Democrat Party to decide whether or not they want to go another run with him.
And apparently, Barron Hill, Tom McDermott, maybe Glenda Ritz, looking at this. Can he get out there and attempt to, can he be successful at an attempt to clear the field?
This early, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, he garnered a lot of goodwill from before, and he's maintaining those relationships, and that's going to be to his advantage. But, you know, we're talking about something that's 3 years away. And in politics, that's like four lifetimes. And who knows what happens between now and then, and who knows whether that's what he decides to go for, or maybe he looks at something else. There are lots of other possibilities out there as well. So, I think he's smart to keep this up, and he obviously enjoys it. And he likes the camaraderie of going to the JJ dinners and eating the chicken. And Mike always liked that too, didn't he, Mike?
I did enjoy it. I don't miss the travel, but I miss the people. It was fun.
Okay.
We could probably put a few on your calendar.
Yeah. I'm going to one next week, actually.
John Gregg keeps talking about how close he came in this race. Mm-hmm. It was about 3 points. He likes to say it was 2 points. It was somewhere in between. But is that a reason to get the nomination a second time?
Look, I understand what John's doing. I spoke with John outside the governor's office late in April. There was a ceremony going on in the State House, and John called me over, and we were chatting, and he said, I'm thinking about doing this again. And I said, really? And he said, yes, I'm thinking about doing it again. And he told me that point blank.
Right.
And I said, well, why? What are you thinking? He said, well, you know, we came pretty close. And I said, yes, you did. And he's thinking he's not going to have Obama on the ticket to be an anchor like he was this last time around.
In Indiana.
And so, in Indiana. So he's an open seat there. But I said, what you're miscalculating is that Mike Pence will end up being a very popular governor between now and then. We've still got 3.5 years. He's not a half a year into his first year yet. I think you're getting a little excited there. But I think he's trying to keep it alive. And I think he's trying to keep his name out in the public. And he enjoys it, like everybody said. So I think if you're seriously looking at it, you're smart to do it. But I think he's making a major miscalculation about what Pence's popularity will be again.
Still got a Facebook page.
Yep.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should John Gregg run again? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, ask me in 2015. Last week's question was, should convenience stores be allowed to sell cold beer? 38% said yes, 60% said no, 2% said let the courts decide. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Mike Pence is still pushing for a federal media shield law, and there's a new bipartisan effort on Capitol Hill to create one.
The governor says that he will encourage members of the Indiana delegation in Congress to vote for the new bill calling for a media shield that would force reporters to reveal sources only under court order.
I do think the allegations of overreach by the Justice Department in this case argue very strongly for the adoption of a federal media shield statute, and I strongly support it.
When Attorney General Eric Holder disclosed that the Department of Justice obtained phone records of 20 reporters at the Associated Press over a two-month period without their knowledge, it prompted tough questions from Congress. It also pointed out, said Pence, that current government regulations don't work.
And they did it secretly. Their rules require them to come to us first, but in this case they didn't.
But the bill is not about protecting journalists. It's about protecting the public's right to know.
When Congressman Pence fought for the law on Capitol Hill, he faced opposition from both the Bush administration and the Obama administration. Now, as then, Pence argues that a free press is the only check on government power.
I think the ability of the press to protect confidential sources is essential to the news gathering process.
Mike McDaniel, was Mike Pence ahead of the curve on this one?
Absolutely. Yeah, he led the fight on this issue two times before when he was in Congress.
Got it passed.
And he wants them to vote on it again. And he's going to try to ask the Indiana delegation to all vote in support of this. And I think that'll go a long way with this delegation. But he's right. This is the most powerful check you can have on an out-of-control government is free press. And he's correct about that. And I think that's something he's interested in.
Well, and he's written letters to the leadership in both the House and Senate on Capitol Hill. Do you think he has influence at this point?
Well, I think that he wants to put those letters out there so he keeps his name in front of the people in Washington. And, you know, what's interesting about this is Indiana has a shield law, okay?
49 states do.
49 states do. The difference with it on the federal level is the national security question. And I think the First Amendment is sacrosanct. But on the other hand, when you got somebody...
The point is, his bill has an exception for national security.
Okay, what would this be?
Well, it calls for... You need to be notified if your records are being subpoenaed, and that didn't happen in this case.
Oh, you need to be notified if your records are subpoenaed. Well, that's what's interesting about it, because you don't ever notify when you're doing that for a criminal investigation. You don't tell them in advance, we're going to subpoena your records.
But this is not a criminal.
If there's a crime committed here,
it's not by the reporters.
Well, that begs the question, though. You've got somebody who at least allegedly has committed a crime in taking information that is a violation of national security, and you're giving it to a reporter, and the reporter says, not my responsibility anymore?
So you're kind of for the First Amendment.
It is a difficult question because in this day and age, you don't have the same kind of checks and balances like you had in World War II.
I'm glad he's doing it. I hope he does have the influence that you suggest. And Indiana should be proud here because he's not the only one. He was in the House. You'll recall who the
Dick
Senate,
Lugar was the
Dick
Senate
Lugar
sponsor.
Was the Senate sponsor.
He couldn't get it through the Senate. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I think I do hope he succeeds. I think it is important. And Ann's concerns are, I think, well-founded. But it is more important that that information possibly come to light if it needs to.
Even if it's about nukes in North
Korea. Well, nobody really knew what he was talking about a couple years ago. Now they know what he was talking about. All right, before we go, our annual Indy 500 picks, who's going to win the race, Mike?
Ed Carpenter, Fuzzy's Vodka.
Pole sitter.
I'm going with Ed Carpenter. His son goes to preschool with my grandson.
Right? and he's a Hoosier. His wife's a Hoosier. Fuzzy's a Hoosier. Go Hoosier.
There you go.
I hope they win.
Mark it down, ladies and gentlemen. It's a sweep unless Shella wants to mess it up.
I was going to say Ed Carpenter, but I don't really like to get along.
we've noticed that. We can stipulate to that, in fact.
How about Graham Ray Hall, then? He's another. Who do you want?
Connor Dale.
We're all pulling for Ed Carpenter.
All right. Unanimous.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.